They got it done under the deadline, so it didn't even get that contentious. Yesterday, we found out late, Major League Baseball and their Players Association agreed to a new collective bargaining agreement. 5 more years, which means uninterrupted baseball will stretch to 26 years. 26 years! That's 3 times longer than the longest stretch the NHL's had over the last few decades. Welcome back to the Big Show. Pat Steinberg along with you. And let's go down the South Street Burger guest hotline. Welcome in Ben Nicholson-Smith, who's been in Texas following this entire story, our Sportsnet Major League Baseball insider. Ben, appreciate this. How surprised are you that the two sides were able to agree on a memorandum of understanding and get this thing done before the expiry deadline?
You know, I wouldn't have been surprised at all if you had asked me that a couple of months ago, because at that point it seemed as though it was almost a guarantee that the sides were going to continue and that they were going to reach an agreement. But leading up to the deadline, there were some pretty intense moments. And really, until yesterday afternoon, the sides kept going back and forth, exchanging proposals. And, you know, at that point, until they've signed on the dotted line, there's the possibility that anything could happen. So I think it was a huge relief for everyone involved, definitely the people in those rooms doing the negotiating. But more broadly, I think just for the entire industry, because like you said, now this really makes it a long time that we've actually been able to enjoy labor peace in baseball.
And in North American professional sports, I mean, the NFL's had a good little chunk of time. They had a preseason work stoppage in 2011. But, you know, for Major League Baseball, who it was such a disastrous canceled season in 1994, that the first few decades of free agency were marked with all kinds of disputes. I mean, 26 years is pretty darn significant.
Yeah, it's a huge amount of time. I mean, really, it's a generation of fans that haven't ever experienced a labor stoppage. And it's a pretty crazy thing. I mean, I was a kid when the 94 strike happened. I remember just how devastating that was, because as a fan, you want to watch your favorite sport and you take it for granted that you can. And really, it's a good thing that fans coming up now and really anyone in the last 25 years or so would have only known labor peace. And that's great, because it turns the focus on the field. And you know, as much as I find this stuff interesting and I enjoy covering it, I enjoy talking about it, but really no one wants to talk about it for more than a couple of days every few years. You know, you don't want it to be a focus for any more than that, and it allows us to keep the focus on the players and on the actual sport.
Well, the good news is this will be the last time that you and I will talk about a Major League Baseball collective bargaining agreement for the next half decade. Ben Nicholson-Smith with us from Sportsnet. He's our Major League Baseball insider. And so let's get into some of the nitty-gritty stuff. And I think it's interesting because, hey, look, you know, the CBA in the NHL is different from the NBA and NFL and Major League Baseball. And I think more and more people have become interested in some of the differences in the way leagues go about their business with salaries, so on and so forth. So let's get into it a little bit. First of all, the luxury tax going to increase each year. Tell us what that means and break down the changes in the luxury tax for the next CBA.
So it's a pretty big change. And basically the luxury tax is the threshold up to which teams can spend without any penalties. So you spend $189 million right now, you're fine. No penalties at all. You're good to go. Beyond that, then you start getting taxed. So for every dollar you spend, you're maybe spending 20 cents toward a common pool. And so it becomes progressively more expensive as a way to deter teams from spending the way the Yankees used to do back in the late 90s, early 2000s. That's really why it was instituted, is when there started to be these huge discrepancies between payrolls from a big market team to a small market team. So now what we're going to see is a gradual increase of that luxury tax threshold. So it will allow teams to spend more without getting any penalties. That's what players wanted. But it's interesting, when you look at the $250 million range, which is a ton, but we've seen the Dodgers bump up toward that range in the course of the last few years. So we know it's possible for teams to get there. If they get there now, they're going to be penalized really heavily. So it's interesting. It's almost as though there's a bigger range for teams to spend without penalties, but if they do spend a lot, then watch out, you're going to be incurring some really big penalties.
Now, that was something the players pushed for and something the players absolutely wanted. How much or how eager were the owners to sign off on that? Because I would imagine some teams would have been perfectly fine with that because it means they can spend a little bit more to an upper limit without getting taxed.
Exactly, and you really hit on one of the interesting points of this whole negotiation, which is that even within one side, you can have these differing interests. And so you can have a big market team. Let's say it's the Dodgers, for argument's sake. Well, they might be perfectly fine spending a ton of money and having their financial strength be an advantage for them. But a team, let's say it's the Twins, a smaller market team, they might not be interested in that at all. They might much prefer to see a lot of restrictions in place on some of those bigger market teams. So, yeah, I think that generally speaking, owners realize that having spending limitations in place is a way for them to spend less money. It's a way for them to save more and to increase their profits. I mean, I think that's the bottom line. That's why we see salary caps and luxury taxes in place to a large extent. Partly, it's because it facilitates competitive balance and it keeps one team from running away from the rest of the league. But that's really hard to do in baseball anyway, and I don't think that we're on the brink of seeing another Yankees-type dynasty either based on what we've seen in the last few years. So in large part, it's a way to keep costs down, and that's why players, of course, are arguing for the opposite because they want to keep making money.
Mm-hmm. Ben Nicholson-Smith, Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca, joining us here on the big show this afternoon. A couple of days prior to yesterday when the agreement was signed off on, the owners dropped their request for an international draft. First off, before we go into the significance of the owners dropping that request, why were they pushing for that? What were the reasons behind that?
Again, I think there are probably a couple main reasons that you could point to, as I understand it. So, first of all, the draft right now on a logistical level is much simpler than what you see internationally. So, for example, in Venezuela, you'd have a different set of circumstances than you might have in Colombia or than you might have in the Dominican Republic. And then Cuba is a whole different set of circumstances. So it leads to a really complicated set of logistics for teams operating in Latin America. And I think that there's a big part of teams that would like to say, all right, let's simplify this. Let's have a draft. We'll just select players. We don't have to have all kinds. We can have a centralized draft academy, a centralized draft database. This way, it would be a way to streamline things a little bit. But there's the other part of it where there are a lot of really big bonuses that have been signed by international players. And having a draft would be one way to keep those costs in check for owners. So again, you know, so much of these CBA talks is as much as it's a little maybe it's not ideal, but a lot of it is around dollars, and so this one would be one way to keep costs down for owners and players. You know, there was some divide on how players looked at the international draft. Ultimately, there are a lot of players, many of whom were Latin American, who said we really do not want to have an international draft, and that ended up being the way it went down.
How was the owners kind of coming off that stance? Was that the final hurdle that needed to be cleared to the two sides coming to an agreement?
I think that it was a huge piece. And up until that point, which was, I want to say, early Tuesday, then you really didn't know for sure where things were going to go and how the momentum was going to unfold. Once that was out of the way, then they were able to move on to the dollars. And, you know, whether it's revenue sharing, whether it's that luxury tax, these are such key ways to the way that the baseball industry operates. And I think that they were able to hammer that out in the final days. I mean, I know for a fact that the luxury tax discussion was something that went into the very final hour. So that's something that I think took them right up until that deadline. But it's amazing, like, just the number of things that they have to focus on in a collective bargaining like this. It's almost endless. Like, it's especially when you look over everything from the All-Star game to roster size to the disabled list. There are so many different factors going into this thing.
And one more on the technical side of things before we get into some more fun stuff with Major League Baseball. And that is, this was the first negotiation for both Commissioner Rob Manfred and Union head Tony Clark. And I don't know, like the fact that this is the first time that they got together to negotiate a CBA and the fact that this thing gets done and they're able to continue on playing, I think that's pretty significant for working relations going forward.
Yeah, I think that's a great point and probably an underrated point, because when you look at these two guys, as much as they've had a lot of experience negotiating CBAs as maybe the number two person or the number three person around, well, this is the first time that they've actually been leading the charge. And so for them, they had to be very thorough. They had to be very careful and make sure that they didn't mess anything up, first of all. And secondly, I think they wanted to show to the people that they're representing, whether it's the owners or the players, hey, we're getting something done here. I may be new here, I may be new to this, and I'm not the guy that's been in charge for decades, but I can still get some concessions for you. So I think that led to a really slow pace of discussions, especially early on, and maybe particularly on the players' side, where I think there was frustration from the owners that the players weren't moving quickly enough. But ultimately, they were able to get it done. And I think both sides can go back to the people they represent and say, hey, we got this for you, and it's going to be another 5 years of labor peace.
Ben Nicholson Smith with us from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca joins us down the South Street Burger guest hotline. Okay, to some more fun and interesting topics. Those are significant. Those are important. But Major League Baseball doing away with the All-Star game, deciding the World Series in terms of home field advantage. That's a little bit more fun. How come this is part of the new CBA? How come this game will no longer decide who gets potentially to play Game 7 of a World Series in their building?
I mean, I think that this was the logical time to discuss any kind of big change. And that's the fun thing about a CBA is, you know, it's not just the dollar signs, and you get to think about the game in a more conceptual way. And one of the things that I think frustrated people on both sides was the fact that this exhibition game was somehow tied to the most important games of the season. And so now they've essentially separated that. They're saying the All-Star game, of course, is still going to happen, and it's going to be great. We're going to see Mike Trout hitting home runs. We're going to see Clayton Kershaw striking people out just the way we should. But it doesn't have to be tied to the World Series, which really is a completely separate event. I mean, it reached the point where it made so little sense to have the World Series tied to the All-Star game that I think everyone was really relieved to see that now they're just going to be two separate events, great in their own way.
How did it last 14 years, though? Like, when I read that, I was stunned that 14 World Series have the home field advantage was decided by an All-Star game. How did it last that long?
See, even you saying that, I hadn't realized that it was that long. I probably would have guessed 10 or something. But you're right. It's something that, you know, you kind of let it slide, and you think, oh, it's not that big of a deal. But that's actually quite a long time. And so it's probably overdue for them to make that change, because you don't, like, the All-Star game can be fun even if it doesn't matter. It's still fun to see these players play games at the top of their ability. They're still going to try. They're not going to take the night off. I think that it's still going to be a really cool game, and I'm looking forward to next year's game, even if it has nothing at all to do with the standings or anything beyond the game itself.
Okay, so that is enough of the CBA stuff. Now that that is put to bed, we can focus solely on free agency and what teams are going to look like when they hit the field in a few months' time. What's the latest on Edwin Encarnacion? What are you hearing as to where he might be leaning right now?
Well, I think the Astros are the team to watch, and there are definitely other teams involved. I think that the Yankees are also a team to keep an eye on, just because the new CBA has now been officialized, and now I think the Yankees are probably positioned to spend a little bit more, or at least more than they have in the last month or last offseason. I think that we could see them get back in that game. So those are a couple of teams to watch with Encarnacion. The Jays, of course, are the team on everyone's mind. And, you know, today some of the media met with Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro, and one thing that Atkins told us was that, you know, it is less likely. They already have Kendrys Morales. It's just not ideal to have two DH first base type players on the same roster because it would end up clogging things up if you ended up having to give someone else a day of rest at that DH spot. So, you know, I'm not going to put odds on it, but I don't think Encarnacion's coming back to Toronto.
I was going to say, so you're not feeling all that. I'm still, and I know that people are calling me naive, and I'm still, the door is still somewhat open in that regard, but are you telling me I should slam it shut?
I wouldn't slam it shut. I would leave a little bit of room, and I would be prepared to have that door closed in the next little while, just because, you know, and to be fair, the sides continue to talk. I mean, they're talking as recently as today, so they're in touch. They know what's going on. And so to that extent, the possibility is still open, but I just don't see it happening. I think other teams are going to be more aggressive, and Encarnacion, after the season he had, is going to be in really high demand, and rightfully so.
Okay, and what about Jose Bautista? What are you hearing there? Because it seems really quiet on that front.
Yeah, I think Bautista's going to have to wait a little while longer, and I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Encarnacion, I can see him signing in the next week. In fact, I expect that he'll sign in the next week. But Bautista, I think it could take longer, and I wouldn't even be surprised if he lasts until the new year and then finds a new team at that point. Because, you know, right now Encarnacion's the number one free agent hitter. I think that's pretty clear. He's the top guy out there. So he doesn't have to wait on anybody or anything. Whereas Bautista, he's going to be well-regarded by teams, but I'm not sure that he's going to be prioritized in quite the same way. So I would guess that he waits a little while longer, lets things settle a little bit, sees where the openings are, and then maybe in a couple weeks, maybe it's a little longer than that, he ends up finding a fit that's really good for him. And I think he'll do pretty well in free agency, but I do think that it might be a little bit more patience required on his front.
Any more forays into the free agency market from the Blue Jays? Anything else that you're expecting from them?
Yeah, I mean, I think they have to. They just have, to me, they have a lot of holes on this team. So I think they have to spend on free agents. Probably one outfielder is coming from free agency. I mean, you could conceivably acquire a couple outfielders in trade, but I think you're probably looking at free agency for an outfielder. I think that the Blue Jays continue to talk to free agent relievers. They're probably signing a free agent backup catcher at some point, although that's going to be a much smaller piece. Maybe even, you know, I'm not going to go so far as to say a minor league deal, but probably an unheralded player for the backup catcher spot. And then, of course, you're looking for a utility type or a right-handed complementary hitter for that first base role. So that's a lot of pieces. I mean, I think that they're really just getting started this offseason. They've got a lot of work ahead, and I would think that a lot of that work gets done in free agency.
Great stuff, Ben. I know it's been a busy day and a busy few days for you, so I appreciate you spending some time with us, getting us up to speed on everything happening in Major League Baseball. Enjoy the rest of your day, hey?
I will, yeah. It's always fun to talk CBA, and fortunately, we don't have to worry about labor peace for another 5 years, so that's always a good thing.
Exactly. We won't have to talk about it for a long, long time. It's good to hear. Thanks, Ben. Have yourself a good week, hey?
You too. Thanks.